the 24th of July. Sunday the 24th of July. This is Sunday the 24th of July. Hi, Phil, how are you?
Oh, hello, Ray.
Can I speak to you for a bit?
Go on.
Okay, there's several things I sent you. One of them was a whole lot of stuff about moon landings.
Oh, yes, yes.
What did you think of that? Have you got any views on that?
Well, yes, all right. When they went to the moon, there was no doubt about that.
Okay.
I think the papers sounded interesting in themselves, but there's no doubt that they went to the moon.
What do you think about the radiation argument? Do you have any evidence about things like X-rays and so on?
Good gracious, they weren't out there long enough for anything of that nature, and they were reasonably protected. I mean, as far as I know, if there was any problem with real X-rays, it would do the damage to the chips.
The equipment?
Yeah.
Do they have chips in those days? I thought they had very primitive...
No, they were as advanced as they could be, and they became more and more advanced, and they would have been more advanced still, and the X-rays are still there all the time, aren't they? You know, all these satellites that we are talking between are still there, and they're there for long periods of time. Now, they would suffer.
Yeah, but they're in kind of low orbit, aren't they? I think, aren't they, relatively?
I'm
not sure. Do you know about the Van Allen belts? I mean, that was supposed to be a part of the
drama. They were discovered. They're just various degrees of ionization.
Mm.
This is, the thing is, people talk as if there's only solids, liquids and gases.
Yeah.
But there are many, many phases. I used to think the gas was all the way up to the tropopause, and I thought it was one phase. But in actual practice, there's dozens of phases. The gas is not something common. You know, the more I study it, the more I find out there's more phases. Now, what I did know a long time ago, that every time you put a different ion in it, ion, I-O-N,
yeah.
You had umpteen layers in the ionosphere and the magnetosphere and the Van Allen belts, and all these were all different bits, but they're all just phases of the plasma phase,
which,
if you call it the plasma phase above the gaseous phase. So there's just lots and lots of them.
Right.
Whereas at one time, as I say, we all thought it was just solid, liquid and gases, but as I would point out to you, the two most common phases that are observed don't get mentioned at one little bit in the physics book.
Right, you mean clouds and so on?
Clouds and biological matter. Because the biological matter is not made of water, liquid, or solid.
Yeah. Do you know how... Okay, the thing about X-rays and so on in the upper atmosphere and out in space is that the only people who know about it are people like NASA, you have to observe it, don't you? It's no good just kind of theorising about it.
They've just taken up a telescope, haven't they? I think it's an X-ray telescope they've taken up this time.
What, in the...
Yeah, when they first sent up rockets, they sent up rockets which could take X-ray pictures of the sun. Now, the big problem with X-ray pictures of the sun, and you can check this up by looking at them.
Hang on, do you know how they did that? What do you mean by an X-ray picture? Because you can't filter it in the usual way with a colour filter, can you?
No, I'm not certain exactly what the technique was. But what I'm going to tell you is there was one other little problem with them. When they took the X-ray pictures of the sun, they very, very rarely or never... I've seen it myself, but they may have done it somewhere. They never give you dimensions. In other words, what they don't tell you is whether the X-rays appear to be bigger than the sun or smaller than the,
right.
The visible sun.
The amount of magnification, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, I think they find them bigger. But what they never do is they assume X-rays travel in straight lines. And they say there's no refraction.
Yeah.
But if there's any refraction, because X-rays are further on than ultraviolet rays, there will be more refraction on an X-ray.
Yeah.
And because there's more refraction, it will therefore make the sun appear a lot bigger.
Right, so they've...
Although the X-rays may have come from a smaller part of the sun.
Yeah, I think you mentioned this before, so although they must have noticed this and been puzzled by it and sort of not mentioned it.
Well, no, because they don't know what the refractive index is.
Yeah.
And, you know, basically, they think the X-rays come from outside the sun, whereas I say they logically come from inside the sun.
What do you think of that chap's comment about helium being found on the sun?
Well, that was... And well, no.
Well, no, sorry, no. The point he's making was not that, but that if the sun is made of plasma, which is all supposed to be disembodied bits and pieces...
Well, yeah, that's
you wouldn't
their
get
version of what plasma... You see, he's conned into what people say is what plasma's like. You see?
So you're saying... what he's saying is that the conventional...
Well, plasma's only ionized gases.
So, yeah, I mean, the idea that helium is observed on the sun... And the sun is entirely made of plasma, inconsistent, aren't they? That's
yes.
I think that's what he was saying.
There's no doubt in my mind, the more I study the bits on the sun, the more I come to the conclusion that it's hot. But you did mention one little thing.
Yeah.
You mentioned the T to the 4th rule.
Yeah, the Planck thing.
Right, well, if you ever want to do a nice little exercise, they say... The books, and I was only just looking in the Daily Telegraph or the Times for the eclipse. They mark the centre of the sun as 15 million degrees centigrade. And I used to believe, oh, that must be right. When all said and done, a lot of clever people have said this, haven't they? But then one day I thought to myself, oh, because I worked on high temperature furnaces.
Yeah.
And the one thing I noticed was that the higher the temperature, the more even the heat, the more even the temperature over a bigger area, or a bigger volume.
You're saying if you draw a kind of graph...
Now, what you can do is, with your computer, you can you know the sun, you know its diameter is 800 million miles, 860 million miles, or thereabout.
Yeah.
Okay, and therefore you can work out its surface area, pi r squared.
Four-thirds
pi r squared. No, its surface area.
Four
pi r squared for the surface area, four-thirds pi r cubed for the the volume. But so you then know... For the T to the 4th root, you know how much heat is coming out. You don't need to have an absolute figure, a relative figure. How much heat is coming out for something that's, shall we say, 6,000 degrees Kelvin.
Right.
Now apply your T to the 4th root to find out how small a piece you would have to give the same amount of heat...
Yeah.
At 15 million.
And it would be a lot smaller. I mean, 15 million is to the fourth. It's quite a big number, isn't it?
It is that, but particularly when you've got the 10 teeth of the fourth in it. And that is the amount, the size you would have of something. You work it out and you'll be surprised how tiny it is. And it must be concentrated in one part of the sun. And also, not only that, but it must have no conduction and no convection. Well, we know there's convection, but assume there is no conduction and no convection, and you work it out and tell me what size it is, and I'll give you a clue. You tell me how many times bigger it is than Wembley Stadium.
You're saying it's the size of a black hole or something, supposedly.
Well, I don't deal with black holes. That's when people can't see. They're in a black hole. They're like Kennedy in an aeroplane.
So which bit of this 2/4 thing are you scared? I mean, the point about the 2/4 thing is it's supposed to, in some way, prove quantum...
Oh, no. That's an empirical thing. It's nothing to do with the thing. It is an empirical formula. You can work that one out, and that'll give you some idea as to how wrong they all are.
Is that your reason for thinking that the sun's temperature is wrong?
Yeah.
That's the main thing?
You work it out, and if it's got to be that small...
So do you accept the 2/4 rule?
Oh, yes. But
not that proves... You don't accept that the 2/4 thing proves that the heat is quantized?
Well, quantized... quantum only means Ray West is Ray West and Phil Holland is Phil Holland. We are both quanta.
Yeah.
And if you have got an X-ray... and you send it out, as most X-rays are, when they're made in X-ray tubes, they come out as little pulses. And each one of those could be said to be a quanta.
Yeah, a quantum.
Each pulse. And therefore light can be said to come out in pulses. And it's only a unit. It's nothing to do... the whole of matter... An atom is quanta, a molecule is quanta. That's all it means. And all this business about... hence, of course, they were able to con everybody about superfluid helium by saying, oh, it's a quantum liquid, very posh. But totally misleading.
Hey, all right, let me ask you a couple of things about... You accept that gravity on the moon is about a sixth of the Earth, isn't it, on the moon,
on the
surface?
Well, that's fairly straightforward, is that?
Because it's nearer the centre, isn't it? It's one of the things. I mean, the actual volume of
the total mass is quite small.
Well, the total mass is quite a lot smaller than Earth. It's about 60th, isn't it, I suppose?
Yeah.
But did you watch the... I only got onto this idea that this moon thing might have been a fake a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I took care to watch these...
Oh, I'd heard it long ago.
You had heard it?
Oh, yeah.
But if you watch the video pictures and kind of fast forward them and watch them, you can see that it does look very much as though these people are just kind of horsing around on Earth. There's no sign of them being particularly light, you know, and even if you look at dust being kicked up, that sort of thing.
The no dust just kicked up because to kick up the dust in the way it's done on Earth is, of course, there is it's like kicking up on a cushion, isn't it, on Earth, because air is a cushion. Like a set of balloons.
Well, what would you say would happen? I would have thought
on the moon, they're doing it in total vacuum.
That's right. So
once it goes up, it can come down. So it wouldn't make a dust cloud under any circumstances.
Well, it wouldn't make a cloud, but you would get a sort of arc of all the particles of whatever size would move in the same kind of way, wouldn't they?
But you wouldn't be able to detect all this lot on TV cameras.
Well, you can see them a couple of times. With their feet moving around, kicking the dirt, and it moves just the same way it does on Earth.
You see, they're not coupled with gas in between. There's no gas to it. It's all in vacuum.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So they'd all move at the same, however big.
No, they'd only move if touched. Newton's law.
Yeah, that's right. You can see them kicking with their feet.
Yeah.
Occasionally they kick a bit of whatever the stuff is.
Yeah, but you can only kick what it's next to. It can't kick. When you kick dust on Earth, you kick some and it moves others.
Yeah.
Because there's gas connecting them. They're connected.
Mm.
But on the moon, it's all in vacuum. And so it wouldn't connect. It would only move that which it was in absolute contact with.
Mm.
You get the idea, don't you? That
I can see why there wouldn't be.
You know, when you blow,
mm.
it isn't your tongue that blows the dust away. It's the gas that blows the dust away. But if there's no gas, it won't blow, will it?
Well, it would move some of it. It would move.
No, it wouldn't move any. Well, there isn't anything to
Sorry, I'm talking about if you kick with your foot.
If you kick with your foot, it would only move that that's actually in touch with your foot, which is very little.
What about a?
And that's what it showed. Very little.
Well, that's not my interpretation. Most of the time, of course, they weren't trying to kick, but when they did, you got a noticeable little chunk of earth moving.
Just a little, yes, but not a massive amount.
What about the idea about the blast not producing,
The blast would only, it blasts into a vacuum again.
Yeah.
Blasts into vacuum.
So what would the effect be? Wouldn't that nevertheless heat up the rock on which it was landing, on the ground?
No, haven't you ever put your hand through a candle? If you move your hand through a candle in no time, these things don't. When they take off on Earth, it doesn't melt the blast off point.
Well, no, but they have special deflector things.
They have deflector things, yeah, but it doesn't melt them.
Doesn't it?
No. They pour water in and all the rest of it, but basically. It's not there long enough to do much damage. Right.
So you're happy that a thing landing like that with blast wouldn't have any effect at all on
it? It would hardly be noticeable, you see, because it's all action and reaction in space.
Yeah, but if you've got a blast, if you've got the area underneath where the thing is landing on, it's not no longer quite a vacuum, is it? You've got all this stuff. All this gas blasting out over it.
Yeah, but there's not much of it. You see, if you blow, you can do varying experiments on this. If you blow, you take a lot of the air on the side with you. And I'll give you one example of this that convinced me of this a long time ago. On an oil refinery, we used to put out oil fires with steam. All right?
Yeah, if you say so.
We had low-pressure steam, and you just put it over the top of the fire, and it just acts like a blanket.
You're saying it sinks down onto it?
Well, yes. It's got a lot of water in it, which takes the heat out, and it's all inert, there's no air in it.
Right, when you say steam, you mean in the conventional sense it's 100 degrees, a bit above 100, and it's...
Yeah,
right.
About 25 psi steam, neither here nor there, as far as... But this particular plant had lances, but it was very unfortunate that there was no low pressure 25 psi steam available at this particular part of the plant. So somebody said, well, that's all right, let's couple it up to the high pressure steam, and when you open the valve, just crack it open, you see, and it'll drop the pressure
a little bit, you mean? Yeah,
so that'll do the trick. Well, it was grand until we had the fire. And then, when they had the fire, they got the lances out, and had there been low-pressure lances, the fire would have disappeared. But when there were high-pressure lances, it sucked air in, and it actually made it go better, the fire. It increased the fire, because it brought in the air on either side, and it just was like blowing it with air.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. It's the same as with these filter pumps that use water, isn't it?
Yeah.
You have a jet of water, and on the face of it, it should make no difference, but
that's right, but it sucks air.
So what are you saying, what's the...
But even steam sucks air, so steam as a gas sucks air on either side of it.
So you're saying if the air isn't there, as on the moon, what's the effect of that?
Well, of course, if there's no air on the moon, it can't suck it, can it? Can't do anything.
So what happens? It just kind of... You don't get the same impressive effects, you mean?
You don't get the impressive effect, because it only affects very, very localised. And there's not, you see, it's not there for how many seconds? We're talking about 30 seconds of the job.
Well, yeah, but surely if there was dust underneath it, I suppose there was a 2-inch layer of dust or something, wouldn't that get blown away?
Well, maybe it did a little bit, but not much. As soon as it hits, and when these things are going, the reaction is that the rocket moves off.
Mm.
You know, and all the rocket does is it goes on the gases that are on top of the other gases. It's not sending gases out all the time, it's moving. You think of how a rocket goes, and think of it as a set of layers, and layers go with time. It's all the gas coming out of the rocket only goes onto the top of the layer of gas that's there.
Right.
And it, because the rocket's moved, it only fills up that bit. You get the idea?
I think that's what you mean, yeah.
Basically, you can think of the rocket having moved because it's put gas in between it and the last piece of gas.
Are you saying the conventional idea that it's action and reaction is wrong? It does actually
push.
Well,
no, it is action and reaction. That's a convenient way of doing it. But that means to say the gas doesn't go further back.
Yeah, what I'm saying is
only on takeoff.
When people describe how rockets work, they often say that it pushes against something, and then they're hastily corrected, you know, that it doesn't really. But you're saying it actually does, are you?
Yeah, it does.
Against what was there before.
I mean, so the classic case is these people who will draw you the balloon, and they will say, well, the reason the balloon goes forward is because of the pressure of the gas at the front of the balloon, you know, when you've blown it up, not the stuff coming out at the back.
Yeah.
But in actual practice, it's the stuff coming out of the back that makes it go forward.
But it would still
because
work.
Because if you bend that round, the balloon will go in the other direction.
Would it still work in a vacuum, a balloon?
A balloon? Mm. If it's got gas in it, it will.
Mm, just wondered. I never really quite understood this properly, I think. Hey, let me put another one of these arguments to you. The business about, you see, when they were stuck on the moon, the most obvious object in the sky is the Earth, right? And it's four times.
That's right, close to.
Four times the size of the moon in diameter, isn't it, roughly? So it's about the only interesting object, really. And yet they didn't pause to take a single picture of it. Doesn't that seem odd to you? Yeah, they could.
But they did take pictures of the.
Well, only from flying around. There were none actually taken. I mean, they could easily have just leaned back and taken one next to the module thing.
I thought they did.
No.
I wouldn't know.
No, all the ones you see the moon. I mean, there's one called Earthrise, which is a very misleading title. I mean, that was supposed to have been taken from inside a thing in orbit.
Right.
Anyway, you're happy about the X-ray thing, because it did occur to me it's very difficult to actually be sure. I mean, the only thing you can be sure of from Earth is that whatever gets through the atmosphere, there must be more of it the other side, mustn't there? That's about all you can say, really.
Yeah.
But,
and I mean, say we've got plenty of satellites in this. These so-called X-rays, as they are,
but if they're below the Van Allen belt, then they're not representative of outer space, are they? That's the point. You know,
I don't know they are.
Well, maybe they are. Yeah. I mean, the point about these. Well,
Van Allen belt's only one of these layers, effectively.
600 miles up in it or something.
Yeah.
I can't remember how high satellites have to be in stable orbit.
Well, but some of them are 2/3 of the way to the moon.
I mean.
Oh yes, they're quite well out.
But that's not in a fixed orbit, surely, is it?
Yeah, these are to be in geostationary orbits. They're a long way out.
Hmm.
I don't know distances.
You don't recall what they actually did with their computers in the days of, like, in 1969? Because the way I could see, all I could think of them doing is just producing like a new number every second or something. It's difficult to see they could have been of any great value. Although, I mean,
they were well ahead, of course, of most things. I mean, say, now, basically, what they were able to do was fairly complex things, but now they can do the same complexity with, you know, a much smaller unit.
Yeah, that's what people say.
A bit like telephone exchanges.
Yeah, but they're always vague on the details, aren't they? I mean, suppose you were piloting it. Suppose you're going around the moon, say, right? And all you've got from Earth is a radio link. I mean, basically, I think you're not really being controlled, probably, because they don't know where you are. As far as I understand it, they weren't sure where these things were.
I reckon they found out travelling in space and controlling in space is a lot easier than they thought it would be before they went.
Think so.
Yeah. Because there's no doubt, you see, because there's no aerodynamics involved, it is purely and simply action and reaction. And the chemicals they use, which I don't know, but the chemicals they use for the rockets in space are all instantaneous ones. I believe they're based on hydrogen, but I don't know the details.
Hydrogen, and nitrogen dioxide, I think, is mentioned.
Yeah, they're things we don't use on Earth. But basically, they didn't need igniting and or electrical connections and things like that. All they had to do was to start them and they went off.
Are you saying they're spontaneously burnt?
Somehow they had got this cracked. And they could, once they let them off, produced the reaction, and when they shut them off, they stopped immediately. So in other words, once you were moving with velocity V, as soon as you shut it off, you carried on at velocity V.
Yeah.
Because you had no force of acceleration.
You think that's explained? I mean, for example, if you're taking off from the moon in your little tiny thing, and you've got to catch up with a thing which is orbiting at a very fast speed. Do you really think it's credible they could have done that? It just seems...
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, say you've seen them, how they coupled up in Earth orbit.
Yeah, but they've got much more fuel and things, haven't they, in Earth orbit? A hell of a...
You see, there's less gravity once you get further apart, you have got less... fewer problems to cope with because you're more or less floating in space.
Yeah, I know, but it's still a long way to go, and you've got...
Oh, it's a long way, but if the problem becomes easier as you get lower gravity, their ways of coupling have become easier.
You think so?
Well, yes.
I mean, you've got...
I would reckon that on the whole, if you judging by the number of times that they have coupled up units in space, it has been extremely good. Compare the same problem is that big tanker full of fuel and has two or three little fighters flying behind it, and they, I don't know whether you've seen how they have to couple up.
Oh, they have long tube things, don't they?
Oh, yes, and it's not easy, even then. It's not easy, but their problem is, you see, they're all in aerodynamic systems. In other words, there's what I would call an elastic fluid, which is air, is bouncing it.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make it easy, whereas in space there is no elastic fluid interfering with this lot.
Where it is, it is.
And if they put a dimension in, if you saw the film, one of the most interesting parts was that had not basically been released before was how they nearly lost the first man who tried to walk in space, or the Americans did. He was absolutely exhausted when he got back, and he'd been nowhere, and he hadn't been there for long. But when they emptied his boots, they found he'd lost a pint or two of water with sweat.
Was this before Apollo 11? I don't know when it was.
This was on the Gemini part. You didn't see the Gemini bit.
Well, I must have seen. You know, I don't remember the chronology. That's
yeah. Well, when they sent Gemini round, it was a two-man job, as distinct from the Mercury, which was a one-man job. Then Gemini was a two-man job. And this was the one where they decided they better do some practice of what happens in space for space walking.
Yeah.
And the first man, he really did make a hash of it. But then from there onwards, they realized more how to do it. And then they got the training grounds of doing it in water to start with. And then they put on handles onto the outside of these spacecraft so that they could hold on.
Yeah.
And they just learned what to do.
Hmm.
But once it's like any athlete training for any job, the first time you do it, you're hopeless. You try a hop, step and a jump, And yeah. You'll not get very far. You won't get anywhere near Jonathan Edwards. In fact, you'll have a job to train yourself for the first time to do a hop, a step and a jump.
Mm.
You'll have a job to do that. But after a while, you will do the hop, the step and the jump automatically.
Yeah.
And then, after a time, you will get so that you can do quite a distance in a hop, a step
okay.
and a jump.
Yeah, I accept that training is important. Hey, Tommy, did you look at those? I sent you a whole lot of printed out things, which I think the chap had pirated, actually, you know, which I took from internet, showing, you know, the kind of thing, shadows being unusually light and that sort of thing, you know, shadows in funny directions. Did you make anything
of
that?
Well, yes, but I mean, say all he was trying to do was to state they hadn't been to the moon, and so he was giving these things as saying it was all staged on Earth. So
you don't.
I just don't accept that.
So you don't. I mean, you haven't examined the pictures particularly. You just. I mean,
well, I've examined them. The only one that I thought had anything in it was the one where he showed two men on the moon in one visor.
Mm.
Now,
I don't know whether that was an official NASA picture, that's the only thing, but...
Well, whether it's an official NASA picture or not, you've only to have two layers on his visor, which he would have, and you can soon get reflections. I have big windows, and I have doubles of many things. Purely and simply, one reflects off the top, and the other reflects off the bottom.
So you get that in the tube, don't you, come to think of it? On the underground, I remember seeing that too, yeah.
You do you? I wouldn't know. But I
well, it's the same kind of thing if you have the...
Regularly, you know. But it depends on the lighting. Mm. A lot depends on the angle of lighting.
The other analogy is, do you remember anything about the albedo of the moon? I mean, how sort of actual dim it is on when you're standing there.
Pardon?
Well, I wonder if you'd had any views on the albedo, the apparent brightness of the moon.
No,
because it's a lot darker than you'd think, isn't it? I think that's the point of it, you know. Although it looks bright as a in the night sky.
Oh, I tell you, I notice this very regularly on my telly. The video recorder always looks bright at night time.
The video recorder, would you?
Yeah, you know the time.
The little display.
It looks as though I've got it on switched on.
Yeah.
But in actual practice, I haven't switched it on. In fact, I press the, you know, the operate button,
right.
And it gets a lot brighter.
Yeah.
But it is purely and simply the background.
What I mean
is,
if you look at the amount of light you get from the full moon, and compare it with the amount of light you get from the sun, which is, of course, almost exactly the same kind of area, volume, you could get some estimate of how much of the sun's light is being reflected by the moon, you know, and give you some idea of the... of how dim the rocks are. Although it's quite a complicated calculation because you've got the stuff going in all directions.
Yeah, and is it worth getting worked up about?
Well, I mean, it would
say, you know, the thing that affects our view of the moon in particular is the amount of cloud we get, and you can't see that.
Yeah. No, all I was saying was that the if you're looking at the amount of fill-in of pictures taken on the moon, you know, the amount of light going in the direction away from the sun, that's presumably dependent on how dark the rocks are, you see.
Yeah,
so you can make a sort of estimate on that basis.
But all these things are a bit like when you watch watch cricket. Do you ever watch cricket?
Not very often.
Not very often. Oh, well, I will tell you.
Are you
when
a cricket
they
fan?
Watch cricket, you see, they're every so often, towards the end of the day, they'll say, you know, it's getting very dark here. They say the same about tennis as well. Oh, it's getting very dark here. But it looks okay for you on telly,
yeah,
because the telly changes it.
Mm.
And you know as well as I do, in any photography, the a lot depends on the amount of exposure you've given it. And what appears okay is different. So if you take it at two different exposures, you get two different impressions of what's there.
Yes, that's true. And of course you can jiggle about with the contrast, can't you?
No, I mean, so they're all you see from the moon, all these things, have all had some form of exposure.
Mm, and that you can check, you can do it in the dark room, you can about the country.
Yes, and the Daru mean change these things as well.
Mm. So you don't go much on that?
So, no, I think that's a waste of time. So. And in fact, what does he tell you? Nothing.
Oh, I think these people are just collecting snippets. I mean, there's business about the crosshairs.
Yes, one they were busy trying to do was to prove they hadn't been to the moon, and they had. I may say, people had seen them take off in the rockets and they came back. And they certainly, if it were all fake, they would have never done Apollo 13.
What about the business of there not being much... You know, when they, if you speak over a... You know, you're like they're 240,000 miles away, more or less.
Yeah.
And, you know, given that radio waves travel at 186,000 miles a second...
Yeah.
There should be a delay of like 2 or 3 seconds or something.
Well, there was.
Well, I didn't think so.
They always have this. Oh, it was much more noticeable until they got round to it of sorting it out. But there's always the delay. Yeah.
Mm, you think so?
Oh yeah, totally. So, but I mean, so that was one of their problems with Mars. That you see, they had to solve. Whereas with the moon, they could hope to the moon. They could more or less tolerate this business and therefore send the instruction out from the Earth, just send the instruction to get a signal from something near Mars back down to Earth and then send a correcting signal back. It would have been a bit ridiculous.
So 20 minutes.
So what they had to do was to make sure that the sensor on the out in Mars had its own computer to put it right, and all they did was change the computer.
Yeah, well, I think I've heard of it quite as 20 minutes. I haven't bothered to check it up.
But yeah, but I don't care what the gap is, but once it's more than 5 minutes, so it's just far too long.
Right.
Because of the distance has travelled, and you know, correcting and recorrecting, you'd just have an M25 situation where he jockeyed up and down with people going fast and slow.
You wouldn't expect to get any Doppler effect, would you? Come to think of it, if the thing's coming around the moon, it's sort of towards you or away from you.
There would be some, but whether it was measurable, I wouldn't know.
Mm. What about one of the arguments is that. For people having been on the moon, is that they left some sort of reflector device behind, but presumably you could do that equally well or better by just dropping one from an unmanned.
Well, of course, one of the most interesting ones was one of the missions landed near an old surveyor craft that they'd landed on the moon, you know, before they put the Apollos down.
Yeah,
and they brought a piece of it back, and they found out somebody had sneezed on Earth, and the microbes were still there. After having been on the moon for probably a year or two.
Hmm.
So, if you talk of X-rays doing any damage, you would have thought they would have had time to do some damage then.
Well, that's the skeptics would just say that was just a fake, you know, that they just picked up a bit of stuff from the lab, you know.
They had tried to eliminate this, but...
What about the moon? What's the other thing? Oh yes, the rock they brought back. That was
That was most disappointing.
It's disappointing. Oh.
Oh yes, yes. That in my opinion was the reason they didn't bother to go too many times. Once they found out there was virtually nothing on the moon, it wasn't worth going to.
Oh, you're talking about things like ores and so on.
Huh?
You mean ore?
It's just basaltic. You know, they could have got that on Earth. As far as I can see, there was nothing of great importance found.
That's interesting you say that, because Pillinger, I remember seeing him on this program recently. You know, he's a geologist who was advocating going to Mars, and he said that they were very thrilled by what they found because, you know, it had been exposed to the solar wind or something.
Yeah.
And they'd made very important discoveries about the age of the rocks and stuff.
Oh yes, they always have.
They always say that.
I mean, so it's like when we found canals on Mars, it's only when we got to Mars we found out there weren't any canals.
Are you saying that he was covering his disappointment by saying that they found...
Well, yes, people get excited on a lot of these things. But
do you know if this rock was distinctively lunar? I mean, if somebody wanted to fake it, is that something they could have done?
I mean, they'd have a job to fake it if they didn't know where it was, wouldn't they?
Well, but the trouble is no one else would know what it was either, would they? Because they
No, it was, as far as I can see, it was most disappointing. I've never really seen a very good analysis of it, but there must be some books of it, because there was enough brought back for them to analyse it completely. But as far as I gather, it just contained the ordinary minerals that are found in basalt.
Yeah.
But not all that au fait on what they are.
Hey, what about the hazard of little meteors flying around, because obviously you can get pretty intensive meteor showers, can't you?
And well, yes, that's always been the great thing, that even on Apollo 13, which was the one where it might have been a meteor that caused the problem, they never attributed that to a meteor.
You haven't done any calculations just to estimate what the chances are of being hit by a thing?
It must. It doesn't matter what chance it is, if it ever does, I would have thought it would do a lot of damage.
They're moving very fast, aren't they? I mean, if they go red hot, white hot in the atmosphere,
oh yeah,
that's far faster than a bullet, isn't it? I mean,
But obviously, this has been no great problem.
Well, that's what the sceptics would say, that this is why they faked it, you know, and that it's actually impossible to get out of, you know, very high up out of the Earth's orbit. Get a person there anyway.
I'm quite sure they've been to the moon. They've landed on the moon
and driven a little bit.
They've done all they could, basically, although there's been programs saying, oh, they're going to use the moon as a base for setting off. And once you work it out that if you were to go up to the moon and land on the moon and then take off from the moon, although it's a lower gravity, so it would be off easier, it is a much lower gravity takeoff if you're just on space lab height.
Right, because you're at zero.
And since they're building the space station, from the space station they'll be able to go off, and they're already off. They haven't got the gravity of the moon to cope with.
So is that more or less at... Oh no, that's not at... The balancing point, is it? The reason they've got low gravity is because it's moving as well, isn't it, I suppose?
It's got
centrifugal force.
About 100 kilometres up, something like that. I wouldn't know, 200 kilometres. No, it's not very far high up above the Earth.
So that's the rotational...
When it's fall finished, we'll be able to see it.
So that's the rotational speed that's the thing, isn't it, I suppose? In other words, you've already got the inertia. If you get up to it, you've already got a sort of launching...
You're already there. So you can take it up there, you can take a load of fuel that you want for the next part of the journey, and just launch it.
Right.
But I'm quite sure that they've thought of all the various combinations. I mean, it's amazing what combinations they've thought of for these things, and, you know, various people have thought of all sorts of ideas. Really, it is quite amazing. I mean, say the other thing that I find amazing is the way Shuttle is so different to Saturn. You know, Saturn V rocket.
Oh yeah,
it's totally different to the Shuttle system.
Shuttles are bigger, aren't they?
Pardon?
Aren't they bigger rockets, these Shuttle ones?
Well, yes, but they're solid fuel rockets.
So what do you attribute? So what?
Well, and what I'm saying is that they didn't just up Saturn, a Saturn-type rocket, to make the Shuttle system. The Shuttle system is really quite different.
Right. So
it shows, you know, what one would say is lateral thinking on the part of somebody.
Why doesn't it just show that they got it wrong in the first place? Was that what you're saying?
Well, no. The Saturn V rocket worked okay. But maybe it wasn't the sort of thing that they thought that could be expanded. Now, if you saw the films, they said at one of the points that it was a race to the moon. But then the Russian rocket, which was a lot bigger than the American rocket, they knew that, capitulated on the launch stand. It blew up.
capitulated. Hmm.
Well, it all blew up into one big cloud.
Yeah, that's what I was putting it. I suppose.
So
you're saying solid fuel is safer.
Well, they use a different system for shuttle.
Yeah.
Whereas Saturn was one rocket on top of another rocket on top of another rocket.
Yeah, three stages. I've seen
stages of rockets,
mathematical.
All of which had different fuel systems. What they were, I can't remember now. I have read it in the past. But they're all different ones. I think the bottom one was gasoline, oxygen. The next one, I think, was hydrogen and fluorine or something like that. Or they did consider hydrogen and fluorine, but maybe hydrogen and oxygen. And then the last one was probably one of these nitrous oxide shocks.
Mm.
But the Saturn rocket one is two solid fuels and a hydrogen oxygen fuel for the final bit.
So it's back to simple stuff, really.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm.
And they'd love to do hydrogen fluorine because there's a tremendous amount more power in it. It's just the physical problems of coping with these materials.
Yeah, especially fluorine. That must be a bit of a...
Yeah.
Well, and the... Mm.
One leak and they'd have lost the system.
Yeah.
The more chance they'd have of another accident. So they abandoned that one.
Yeah.
And they were quite happy to. Or they said they were short of money. But they're short of money, they were busy building shuttles.
Well, everybody always says they're short of money anyway, don't they?
Yes, they're short of money. They're always doing more to do more. But they changed on to shuttles. And as I point out, that basically launching from a space lab is a lot easier. And even if you don't launch from a space lab, there's so much more information you can get, so much easier if it's only a short distance up and you can send a rocket up to couple up. And don't forget, they couple up extremely well. I mean, if they were all said and done, it's an American system that's coupled up with the Russian system to go into the Mir space station, which is really a remarkable thing, because they couldn't say, well, oh dear, we haven't quite fitted, have we? You know, they have to fit first time. There's no alternative.
Isn't it, I don't know, the thing is, if you take up another rocket up there, you've still got to the problem of taking it up there, haven't you? So the nets, is
it
actually...
You could take it up in 2 weeks.
Yeah, but is there any net saving? Because you've still got to have rockets to blast it up there, haven't you?
Oh, yeah, but the point is that you need most of your rocket just to get it out of Earth's orbit.
Hmm.
Once you're at the space station, you're out of Earth's orbit.
Hmm. Out of Earth, well, out of gravity.
The gravity core.
I'm not sure there isn't, are you absolutely sure there's a net saving?
Well, if they think so, there will be.
I just wondered.
There's gone dozens of calculations on these sort of things. I'm not into it.
Mm.
But,
okay.
I mean, say the way in which to get to Saturn with Galileo, they went via I don't know whether it was via Mercury, but certainly via Venus, and did this slinging process.
Mm.
Now, it's extremely good. I mean, say, you've got to be very accurate on all these things. And likewise, they pointed out on the Apollo that the angles that these rockets had to be, or these returning spacecraft had to be very, very accurate.
Mm.
But what amazed me was the relative crudeness of the equipment that they needed to use to make them accurate, which made me feel that they got this bit sort of thing taped.
How do you know it was crude? You're just looking at the pictures.
Well, on Apollo 13, they hadn't got much spare to deal with it. And I believe there was, they told us in the programme that they weren't quite on the right orbit, but by doing it with a wristwatch and a handheld system, they were able to get the thing into the right orbit, and they landed more or less where they wanted.
Well, that was the story, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, that was the story, and I would think it was more or less right.
Hmm. Yes, yes.
But, you know, in my opinion, the Russians also did remarkably well, because they had also sent up a rocket with a remote moon lander, which sampled the moon and returned it to the orbiting satellite, you know, orbiting spacecraft, and then it returned to Russia. So the Russians actually collected their own sample of moon rock without ever sending a man there, which was very good, I thought.
Well, that's much safer, everything, isn't it?
Well, yes. I mean, say, you see, had the Americans had an accident on the moon, the Russians would really have been able to say, you see, we told you so. We've done it remotely. And that's what we're doing on Mars.
Yeah. Well, there's not much choice, is there, at the moment, anyway? I mean, you're not going to have to send somebody out there for a year or two, however long it takes.
It takes days, isn't it?
I don't know, it's an awful long way, isn't
no,
it?
It's, no, maybe 8 weeks. It's not a long time. I mean, say, they're launching to Mars when they've got them in the right place.
Mm.
Don't take all that length of time to go.
Well, you've got to come back as well.
Oh, yes, if you've got men on board, yes.
Mm. Okay.
But it's interesting. But then again, I've just a suspicion they're not getting as much out of Mars as they'd hoped.
No. Just red rocks, basically.
Yeah, the one that puzzles me a little bit, not entirely, it certainly was difficult for me to understand to start with, is that Venus is covered with clouds. Of that, there's no doubt. Doesn't matter what the clouds are, but Venus is covered with clouds. Now, the Earth, I don't know what it's like with you, but we're also covered with clouds today.
No, we're burning hot down here.
You're burning hot, yeah. Well, you haven't got clouds. They've all come to us. But as I point out, the clouds that surround the Earth are not made of oxygen, which is there in a reasonable quantity, or nitrogen, which is there in a very large quantity, but they're made out of, and we do know this part, of a substance called water, which is there in a very small quantity.
Yeah.
And yet, you can't see oxygen, you can't see nitrogen, both of which are there in the majority. What you can see is a minority component. But the minority component is the same as the oceans of the Earth, which is the biggest quantity of liquid we've got on the Earth.
Yeah.
What amazes me is that they say that there is no liquid on Venus.
Well, that's true, isn't it? Yes, they think there's just a sulfuric acid or something in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And a dry plane, which
there
is supposed to...
There's no liquid at all on Venus.
They maintain...
I thought there should have been, but let's assume they're correct. The only thing that I would state is that it's remarkable that the clouds around Venus are probably in equilibrium with, because they know there's rain and so forth, rain, you know, of whatever the cloud is made of.
Yeah.
When it lands on the solid surface of Venus, which is something like 200 or 300 degrees centigrade, or even higher than that, I forget exactly what the figure is, and it's reputed to be fairly high, that it immediately flash evaporates back again. In other words, it stays up aloft because it's flash evaporating all the time.
Mm.
But once it's cold, it can come down. So the surface need not contain the liquid phase, because it's always coming down. When it gets down, it can't stay on the surface. It's got to go back up.
Yeah, you're saying that's not very convincing.
Well, it would have been better if there had been liquid there as a base altogether. But that's what they've said, is from the observations they have made, which I find a bit tricky when you think what the wiring system would be for all their equipment.
Hmm.
How on earth can you get an insulator? How would you know that's going to work at 200 or 300 degrees centigrade?
Yeah, I wondered. I had similar problems about the moon.
Can't
actually.
Be any of the PVCs.
Hmm.
They'd all vanish.
Tell me, have you contemplated the problem of temperatures on the moon? Is that a problem for human life? Because I can't. There's another problem, is visualizing. If you're in a little tin can thing flying through space, and you've got just the sun's rays on you, I can't make up my mind whether you'd be cold or hot or what, you know. Cause
the problem of temperature is a tricky one. I'll tell you how you can see this. If you've got a thermometer and you have it in the air, unless you've got it shielded, you're not measuring the air temperature at all.
Yeah, I remember you mentioning this before. In fact, I think in Richard Scorer's book, he says that a whole lot of readings on things like rainfall and I think temperature were useless because the people didn't carry out the proper precautions.
That's right. Mm. It's very, very difficult actually to measure some of these temperatures.
Yeah, but well, all I was thinking really was the point of some people claim on the moon.
There seems to be no record of the astronaut ever putting a thermometer into the ground and measuring its temperature. Now, whether they didn't think this was worth it or whether
that's
they
a good
did
point, actually. Yeah, they had a batch of experiments, didn't they, including things like solar wind tests and so on.
Yeah.
But now you mention it, yeah, I don't know about that temperature.
They certainly did seismic tests on the moon.
Hmm.
Because one of the experiments was when they were coming away from the moon, they dropped something onto the surface, and then from the old surveyor crafts that they'd had around, they were able to get the signals. Mm. But I gather that basically they found nothing.
Well,
they weren't able to interpret it.
Mm. Actually, this is quite. I remember seeing some seismic kind of
results.
Oh,
they said it rang like a bell, didn't they, or something? Yeah.
Mm.
Well, of course, this is part of the problem is in vacuum.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. You've got no sound. No. By the way, do you think a landing, a rocket landing on the moon would make a lot of noise? Because one of the criticisms of this usual view is that you've got this bloke saying things like, "Gee, but a dust has come up, and the eagle has landed." And there's no sound at all in the background.
There wouldn't be. There's no sound in space.
Yeah, I know there isn't, but the vehicle
you
itself.
Know, that's the.
But the vehicle itself.
What I laugh about when people tell me all about Big Bang, you know, I say, well, you can't have a bang in space.
That's right, but the vehicle itself would shake, wouldn't it? It would presumably transmit vibrations. So inside the thing. Although
I believe they had that.
Well, I don't know. It did sound very quiet, I mean, on the broadcasts. So I'm a bit, I'm agnostic about that. I would have thought there would be a lot of, if you were watching it from the moon, but since it's a vacuum, you wouldn't hear anything. Although there might, I suppose there might be vibe.
I wouldn't know.
So inside, yeah, so you're agnostic about that. You might expect some sound.
A lot of these things, people, when they do them, they're a bit surprised at what the final result is.
Mm,
But then after a while, you just take it as that. It's a bit like all these road surfaces. We used to travel up down to the Great North Road, and they had to have a sign at one point to saying, tyre squeal. and therefore, about 15 miles of road. The tyres just squealed on the road.
I don't mean, because it's concrete or gravel or something.
It was a particular type of concrete, I think.
Mm.
But now they've decided they want another type, a very quiet one for these urban motorways. And they're building, there's other materials which give quieter roads. How they do it, I don't know, but this one on the thing, if you